I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, we are back for episode 116 of Digital Divination. Just like last time, we have no disclaimer because Ron is unavailable again today.
He's having some sort of family thing, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. They're a celebration of sorts.
A celebration, an emergency.
So we'll allow him that special time. But it gives us some time, you and I, to talk without him. So that's good. I know he doesn't listen to these, so we can say whatever we want.
All right. Okay. Good.
or maybe he does. So, so the topic was going to be all the cool stuff that Ron said and did and participated and saw at Gen Con. So we'll table that for sure. Next time into the future.
Yeah, hopefully he'll remember.
Yes. Because
I have the stuff.
You know, I heard. So Ron actually fell ill to this, but like 40% of I heard 40% of people from some company ended up with some crud from Gen Con.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say which companies in particular, but I heard a lot of people got it.
At least it wasn't 40% of Gen Con.
No.
Because that would be 20,000 people or something like that.
But apparently a lot of people from a particular company, I'm not saying whose company, and not necessarily Ron's, got it like on the way out, right? Oh. So they were sick prior. It was kind of I was just talking to somebody about this, and I was like, I was going to go to Gen Con, and now I'm kind of like, given what's gone down, maybe it was
for the best. Yeah,
for the best.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we'll talk all about that next time. But in lieu of that, Jason and I were talking offline for a wonderful topic. And I know our listeners don't know this yet, but we are gearing up for the Starfinder 2 second edition playtest.
Mm-hmm.
And Jason, you were struggling with something and you wanted to maybe get some help or talk about what you're doing.
I just want to talk about it a little bit because I'll talk about things I have done and not tell you exactly what's going to be done. But, you know, we're running a Cosmic Birthday and, you know, it's a module. So as a standalone module, it doesn't come with a player's guide per se, right? So the tricky thing is a little tricky for this group. We make characters and it's just, I always find a little bit like people like to make their characters. I'm going to make this character. This is what I want to play. And now there's not a lot of general thought about like, oh, do I know this person? Do I know this other player, this other character, how we all come together? And I've got to, I know what the first steps of the adventure are. How do I make it interesting to the characters moving forward? But also like in general, because I know we're going to be recording a little bit, how do I make it interesting to a listening audience a little bit too.
Right.
So I just want to talk a little bit about like personalizing, because you get these pre-written adventures and you can do whatever you want with them once you have them, right? Just maybe talk about advice for that and some anecdotes about how you and I have done that kind of thing.
I think that's a great idea. It's funny, you know, the very first Starfinder game I played was being run by Scott Keim, who you know is in finance with Paizo. And we were playing Dead Sons. So book one, Dead Sons, which incident at Absalon Station, right?
That's right.
And the way he laid it out was we had been playing Pathfinder and we're doing that. And then he just had it, now end simulation and your shuttle arrives in Bay 94 and you all have to be on the shuttle. You know, so you're in a Pathfinder simulation
and funny. All
of a sudden we're in a firefight. Hope no spoilers, but there's a firefight at the start of that.
I think it's okay to say that first thing that happens in the very first Starfinder Adventure Path.
Yes. So that's how Scott handled. And
that's funny.
We just have to be all in the same shuttle, and boom. So,
okay, but you know, and so did you sort of like were your characters like playing out the fact that oh, I mean, we were just playing in a you know an MMO, you know, a fantasy MMO together on this fantasy holodeck. On the shuttle. So you already kind of like, did you ever like reference stuff that happened in the Pathfinder?
No, game? No, we didn't do any of that. That would have been really cool if we had done that. Right. It was, right. You know, again, very first go around. We're all new to Starfinder. It was
sure.
This is how Scott wanted to make that particular transition. No, it would have been nice if, oh yeah. And you would learn team tactics while you're in the simulation and you knew each other's voices and you could do hand signals that you, yeah, we didn't do any of that. That would have been really cool. Actually.
Well, I mean, yeah. How, I mean, the question is, did you know each other beforehand? And then like how, but if you didn't, how close do you really get with someone you're like going on a World of Warcraft raid with, like, or, you know, like doing a pickup dungeon.
On have you raid. Done you raiding? Really have you done raiding in World of Warcraft?
Not really. Not really.
Okay. Yeah. Like, that's, I mean, that's a pretty tight group, you know?
Okay. Fair enough. Tight group. Okay. Not, that, okay. So. Not a raid then just like a, just a pickup dungeon where you just get a bunch of randos together.
Yeah.
And do a dungeon, right. You know, it,
yeah.
It,
no.
After you're done, you know, do you talk to them ever? Really? Never. You know, so.
And, right. Well, yeah. Fair enough. But if we were all in a shuttle and then we were going to the same place, maybe we would do that. But
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, basically, it was very far-fetched that you would actually get together and do it that way. And you know, I've kind of played the opposite side where we all have very interlinked backstories, and mm-hmm. that takes quite a bit of work to do that. You know, oh, ahead sure. of time more. More than a simple session zero, right? And you're writing more detailed backstories and relations and stuff. And, but yeah, what's your thinking on that for this? I mean, how would you like to do it?
I don't know. Like, this I never really know. Sometimes the you get a group and they're just like, okay, we're gonna you all agree what to play with, and you're like, we're all gonna play dwarves, or let's all be the same dwarf clan, right? Oh, yeah. Great! Then you can just sort of play off that, and you don't necessarily need to give like super detailed backstory of the clan or whatever. You just know that like that's my cousin, you know, we're brothers, or you know that kind of stuff. So Steph, sometimes I will, very rarely, I've had GMs do this to me too. Basically, during character creation, be like, "Hey, you two, are you cool with?" Your characters being just related, just, you know, hey, you're both playing human. I did this with the very sort of early 2E camp Pathfinder campaign when I was sort of doing strange aeons, like converting it on the fly. Two players pick human and they also pick the same heritage, which doesn't really mean anything for humans, but they pick the same right. heritage. And I was like, you two should be brother and sister.
Yeah.
And that's all. That was like the maximum amount of like connection that I, even though that one is true, you don't know who you right. are. Strange Islands, you wake up with amnesia. But I was like, do you guys mind playing brother and sister? Yeah. So I've had that happen to me too in other games too. But like, yeah, sure. You get a little connection, and then you can sort of use that as a springboard for role playing as you go. Mm-hmm. You can still sort of make your characters as however you make your characters, right? But you don't have to worry about interconnectivities in that. The other sort of thing is like, you know, one thing is, you know, with Pathfinder, Starfinder, you know, the backgrounds, if two people happen to pick the same background, you can always be like, hey, maybe you guys know each other because of that. You know, think about that.
I know him from work. Yeah.
Yeah. Or yeah. Whatever the background might be. Yeah. I mean, it might be not, it might not work. It might just be like, oh, we yeah. both picked the charlatan background. Well, that could work. You could be a paracon artist, but like, yeah. I don't know. I can't think yeah. of something else, but like, we both picked acolyte, but we're different god. We worship right. different gods. So right. we wouldn't be necessarily in the same group, same monastery mm-hmm. or whatever.
Mm-hmm. What? And a lot of that depends on really if the group wants to do a lot of role play, right? If they don't and they just want to, okay, let's just get on with whatever it is, versus if they actually want to have a lot of inter-party engagement.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah. If the players aren't interested in necessarily like character motivation and role-playing, you don't have to worry about them not like essentially not taking the job of the adventure, right?
Right.
Most of the time people are like, yeah, okay, that's what we're doing. Let's go do it. Like that seems... And that's fine. So you don't have to necessarily worry about interconnectivity of characters or how to do it. You're just like, hey, you guys are all here. This guy says, go do this thing. So you go to, everyone goes and does that thing, right? It's simpler that way in a lot of ways. But sometimes, I like to also just also have a little bit of story in that.
Right.
What's going on, who these people are, and so it makes sense that they will continue to do the thing once it gets hard, because they're going to be like, oh, go right. pick up, you know, go deliver this from point A to point B. Oh, sure, that's fine, whatever, easy money to guard this caravan. Well, it's going to get hard, and then it's going to get weirder, probably. You're going to have to then eventually save the world or whatever. What makes you stick around and stick together? And a lot of times with a lot of groups, you know, to be perfectly honest, it is sort of inertia. We're all playing the game. Of course, we're doing the quest, right? Yeah. Otherwise, what are we doing? But sometimes groups, you know, sometimes you hear stories about groups where like, we don't want to do that. And then you got to, you know, if you're playing a pre-written adventure, you got to figure out a way to take the stuff that's written and kind of like massage it back into the into the flow.
Right.
Or, you know, throw that pre-written adventure away and go do something else.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting, so I played a lot of Starfinder Society. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those are standalone adventures, and they're very, you know, do three things and then you're done in 4 hours. I mean, they're all set up. But I've played with a lot of the same people and their same characters. And so the characters, having gone through multiple of these missions, kind of know each other a lot, and they kind of do things a certain way. And so it almost becomes more of a, you know, our characters know a lot about each other because they've done a lot together. And we know a lot about each other's characters. And so we kind of know what they can do and how we can set them up and things like that. So part of it, I have to say, is depends on how much the players know each other and how much they know about each other's characters too.
I mean, 100%. Like, I feel like I may have said this before here, or at least I've said it out loud other places. You know, you and you're gaming together. It's the group matters a lot. You know, you have to play with people you kind of like and know, so you can do fun things and not necessarily have to worry about someone being weird about stuff or something. You know, to get the social awkwardness out of the way when you're sitting down to a table of 12 strangers, which is, you know, obviously can be a lot of fun if you're going to a con or you're going to society play or whatever. Right. But there is a certain amount of like uncomfortableness, I guess, for lack of a better word, if you don't know the people you're playing with, which is why safety tools are important, right?
Right.
But with you're in a group that you've played with for 20 years, that stuff doesn't all often, you know, sure, it helps to do the safety tools and stuff like that, but like the sort of like comfortableness, you're right in, you're like, oh, I'm going to play that character. Oh, what? Are you going to play that character? Oh, that sounds fun. Let me play something that bounces off that character. I'll be the healer. Right. You'll be the person. Like one thing that I was doing, like, I wanted to play, it was a couple, not a real one shot, it was like a two shot essentially. Just kind of wanted to play a poppet champion, just to be like a stuffed centaur. Before the centaur ancestry came out, right?
Yeah.
So, but we're working through stuff, and my friend was like, oh, I'm going to be this sword, you know, this swashbuckler swordsman who's like drunk and, you know, is trying to clean up. Oh, what I'll do is I'll be the puppet who was wished to life by like your like fiance's daughter, who, because you're not a good person and need to be a better person, so I'm going to be your drill sergeant. You know, you're conscious. I'll be sort of a Jiminy Cricket, and I'm like come in and be like, oh, you're, and I was basically playing, I played the puppet just always yelling at this one character, but you know beforehand, like, I'm gonna yell at you a lot. I'm probably going to berate you for doing a bad job when you mess things up, or, you know, telling you, giving you this sort of like, oh, now finally you've done a good job kind of stuff. And that can be, you know, again, it was only for two sessions, so it'll be fun to play that out more. But like, you know, you can have these dynamics with people you know a lot better personally.
Right. Yeah. So for players being able to do that, it's individuals can handle that quite a bit on their own. Right. But for a GM, this is kind of where we started.
Yeah.
In terms of personalizing an adventure for your players, and, you know, we talked a little bit about meeting, right? So how are you going to meet? Do you know each other already? How are you going to run into each other? How are you going to interact? How do you all want to do that? Right? So that's something that you can do as a GM. Yeah.
Yeah, talk about it. One thing that I really forgot what I was going to say. Oh, my God.
Okay.
Just left my brain.
So it was about starting, about our group or?
Yeah, it was about, not about your group, not about starting, just sort of about, my mind has gone completely blank, Joe.
That's fine. How about I'll pick
up? You say a few things and
I'll say something. All right. So, you know, when Jason brought up this topic, it reminded me of a session I was running a couple weeks ago. I'm running Fist of the Ruby Phoenix. And for those who don't know, it's like it's a big battle royale and a whole bunch of different battles and things that you're going through. And we're just almost done with the first book, right? So we're doing a lot of stuff there. And the players have been earning some income through various things, and they wanted to go spend some money. And so there is a village that's in the book, but there's not a whole lot of description about the process and what's going on. And so basically we spent 3 hours. I let them kind of role play, and I created NPCs and created ways to get the different things they wanted. And so, you know, I had prepped, you know, here's the next two fighting groups they have to do and the random monster encounter they might do. And instead we went on a shopping trip. And and it was a very enjoyable trip because they wanted to do something, you know, so one of them, you know, worships a certain deity. They want to go take care of something there. Another, you know, somebody wanted to look into this. And so I kind of built all these little side quests on the fly for them and they all really enjoyed it. And it's like, okay, well. And for me as a GM, it's like, well, this is just storytelling. I have to figure out the story that matches up with what they want to do and to make it seem seamless. That, oh, yeah, this is just kind of part of this overall thing you're doing. It's obviously it's built in so you can go on to the next thing. And that was a lot of fun.
Yeah. It's good. So what probably brings you back to the point that I was about to make that I've now remembered.
Okay.
You know, you've read the adventure beforehand. Obviously, you're reading the adventure. This is all going to be sort of obvious advice too, but you're reading the adventure beforehand to sort of prep it, right? And then say you're coming into a session where you like coming into session zero and people are making characters. Once everyone has made their characters and talked maybe a little bit about the relationships or whatever, for me, what I'd say is read the adventure again. Now that you have an idea of what kinds of characters people are playing, you can kind of look at what's going on at the beginning or in the middle or at the end to connect to each individual character. And so there is a that'll allow you to sort of foreshadow things that are coming up or sort of say you've got to tie to this village. Maybe you know beforehand, you know, you knew about this village and someone says, well, maybe I'm from there earlier on. Now you're there. You'd be like, oh yeah, you know where to go because you've already said that you're from this village. Or maybe you knew the name of the village and people are like, I don't know where I'm from. And you say, well, maybe you could just suggest the name of this village that they will happen to go to later on. Right. And that'll tie things in a little more, right. That'll be the personalization that'll help, like playing through, or starting Abomination Vaults. Right. I'm like, well, who wants to be from Otari?
Right.
Right. You have a moment here. And then every time they go back to Otari, they can be like, oh yeah. They can ask basically like, do I know where there's a, you know, a tavern or a shop or whatever? Oh, of course you do. And you're an old friend with this person. You can have that sort of like semi in media rest kind of conversation. Not a conversation, not exactly in media rest, but just sort of a conversation with a shopkeeper that was like, hey, it's, you know, they know your name, you know, they know that character's name as soon as they walk through the door. How you doing? How's your brother or sister, whatever other relationships they might have. Make things feel a little more, you know, lived in and personalized if you can.
Yeah, no, I like that perspective. I haven't really thought about that because, like, I have one character in particular, Mark, who you know, Mark from our game, and he always, every time he plays, he has some kind of something that his character, something is motivating his character. And in our particular game, somebody had come and raided his village, and he's looking for the warlord whose standard is a certain thing. Mm-hmm. And so everywhere he goes, he's trying to get more information about that.
Right, yeah.
And so I happen to, you know, he's encountering somebody, another team, and turns out they're from a neighboring village, right? Mm-hmm. And so he asks them these questions or shows them some stuff. And so then he gets a name for somebody and then finds out, I'm dropping these things. These are going to be big bads that come later. He's going to be able to go face to face with this big arch nemesis he's been searching for his whole life. And because I knew this thing early on and I knew some people at the end, I said, oh, I can pull these people in. So that, that's like, I don't routinely do that. And so now I'm thinking, well, maybe we should always do that. Now that's a really good suggestion.
Sprinkle it in. You don't have to tie every big bad to every different PC because they might not make sense for one reason or another.
Right.
No one's going to, no one in your Abomination Vaults is really going to like have a direct tie to the main bad of that. Right. Cause but they might know, like, hear the, you know, oh, you've heard about the fairy, you know, the nursery rhyme that the kids say about the, you know, the gauntlet. Yeah. Those are things you could do. Like, yeah, for Skull and Shackles way back in first edition, I had someone playing basically took a barbarian, was playing a barbarian who with that sort of like took some stuff to take this like animal-like instinct saying like, oh, it's because I've got a, you know, I'm part were shark basically. Right. something happened in my backstory where I lost my wife and, you know, something happened. And then I was like, cool. Awesome. I kept that in the back of my mind. Cause I knew that in book 5 or 6, you actually fight a were shark.
Wow.
And so at that point, at the beginning of the campaign, year and a half later, this were shark shows up and I'm like, this guy looks familiar to you. And you're like, no way. Yes, this is the guy who killed your wife and infected you with the were-sharkism that you have. And so they get to have that, you know, it's just like literally just one fight.
I don't
even know if that were-shark even has a name.
Yeah.
It's just like this in minor mini boss maybe at best.
Yeah.
But it's good that they show up at last, you know.
Yeah.
You want to have these little connections that happen every once in a while, but you don't necessarily want to make the world super small.
Right.
What I mean, you want it to be sort of people. Yeah, you know, you're not going to know everybody everywhere because that makes everyone too connected. But you can always have these occasional people pop up that are like tie into someone's backstory. You can always make any NPC in like later on in the adventure sort of tie into someone's backstory with just like a minor amount of tweaking.
Yeah, we did that with Dawn of Flame. There's a Mims character in like book 3. He's a Skittermander who wants to be a police officer. And he's in a police station, and he ended up being a reoccurring character throughout, the rest of the adventure. You know, he'd show up at opportune times to help out or do whatever. You know, just again, he was kind of a cute, interesting NPC in one particular spot, and then it just kind of grew into this, you know, this at the end, he ends up being this high ranking, you know, folk hero. For
he gets like, promoted a bunch. That's funny.
Yeah.
I mean, that's also great advice for personalizing these things is to if there's any kind of NPC that the PCs glom onto.
Right.
Bring them back.
Right,
not in there. Bring them back and tie, you know, have them be like the person who says in book 2, I need you to go do this other thing. And they'll do that, right?
Right.
Yeah. So it's always I did a lot of stitching together of different things for Outlaws of Alkenstar, which I just finished up about like 3 months ago. Mm-hmm. And you know, a lot of this, again, that's got a player's guide. It says you've been wrong one of two people, and so you have the motivation to continue doing things against them since they are the two big bads of the adventure.
Right.
The whole path, right? But there was other things too that I wanted to land there. Oh, there's maybe this lieutenant, not even a lieutenant, like lower than that even, who's like kidnapped somebody, ends up being someone's son who who had fallen. And, you know, it was clear that, you know, something that they didn't talk, you know, the player didn't talk about having a son at the beginning of the adventure, but at some point I was like, oh, I need some time, maybe get a little bit of tie-in. You're in crime, but you're an older individual. He was playing an old lady, basically. do you think you have any kids? And, you know, maybe I have someone who's got. There was just when I was tying it in, it was like that it was like you're after this crime boss because he's corrupted your kid at some point. And so at the point, you're like, oh my gosh, who got kidnapped? Oh, you know who was? And it turns out that's your son kidnapped this guy. So you get there. Do you it becomes fun. Now this NPC, which would have been just maybe a normal fight, do you fight them? Or do you have to do something else? like to mm-hmm. talk them down because you know he's falling in, is he too deep in, you know, it opens up the types of encounters you have, so you don't have to always have knockdown dragdown fights.
Yeah, no, I like that. That's good. Yeah, so we've talked about a lot of middle stuff and a little bit beginning stuff. What about endings of adventures, personalizing them?
Well, what I like to do with endings, you know, normally you'll fight the big bad and whatever, and then you'll have that climactic encounter and whatever you need to do to save the world or whatever. But I always like to just sort of, after that's done, talk about what happens after that. And have everybody be like, what happens to your character when this is all done? You know, maybe we see some epilogues basically of what you're doing. Oh, you're teaching at this university. Great. Cool. What does that look like? Just a sort of like a real wind down for the campaign too. So people can see like, oh, these characters, you know, assuming you're not going to take them on another adventure path, maybe even if you are, have some sort of like happy ending, or at least some sort of ending, some sort of character.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. So
ending.
Yeah, we happened to experience that. So we wrapped up our Scum and Villainy campaign, Intrepid Scoundrels, and that's exactly what you did. You went through it with everybody. Yeah, yeah.
I want to know what it means. I mean, granted, like, so I like to sort of, I do like to think about adventure paths or just running games a little bit like movies, a little bit like, or like TV shows. And you don't always get those sorts of things in movies and TV shows. You don't get an epilogue of them, but sometimes you do. Right. Like sometimes you'll see a TV show that's like, oh, the main arc of the story wraps up, and then it'll be like 5 years later, and you get to see people doing things or whatever, or now I've had a kid or what, you know, stuff like that. I think it helps people sort of like, because this is the end of the, you're probably not going to be playing this character. You get some closure. You're not going to be playing this character anymore. It helps you say goodbye to the character a little bit. Sort of leaving them in a way that you know there's either they're continuing to just sort of be scoundrels and go on adventures. Always my favorite kind of ending is a non-ending of like, oh yeah, this keeps happening, but we don't see it.
Yeah.
Or they get, you know, their happy ending of like, oh, they've retired and they have a family, or they've got all their money and they're just living the good life on the beach somewhere, or you know, finally became mayor again or something.
Yes, yeah, no spoilers
here, right? sorry
That's okay. Interesting. I'm thinking, so for some of our adventures, like in when we're running Starfinder, you know, we'd go through a lot of them were 1 through 12, right? So a lot of the adventure paths. And one, we went from there to Devastation Arc, and several people carried forward their characters from Dawnflame into Devastation Arc. And so it was kind of a continuum there. And then, but some people changed things up a little bit too.
Sure,
so, you know, introduced new ones there. But for the people that carried them all the way through, it's kind of neat to see, like, for one of them, again, Mark's builds in these storylines and stuff. Where's character, his initial motivation at level one was finally reached in level 20 at the end of Devastation Arc. Wow. And so so you're talking, that's like 4 years, you know, of playing to get all the way through that. And it's all recorded if anybody wants to go listen to it all. But so that was kind of cool, you know, to see the whole arc like that.
Yeah. And for me, to sort of go back a little bit to like, because I think about these things a little bit like TV shows and these kinds of narratives, for me, sort of, it's always then important to have that beginning scene be something that is, for me, gripping and has a little bit of introduction to a character. Whether or not there's something that's going on that's not involved with the characters themselves, but then they show up. So you get that idea. So you kind of like having a little bit of an idea of who the character is right off the bat. Some players might not have that fully formed in their mind, and that's fine. You can just sort of say, oh yeah, they're doing something involved, you know, with their class, or there's some main archetype that they are, right? Doing that. But for me as a GM, I also like to kind of like have a little bit of just something a little in there. Now, a lot of sort of adventure paths, which are pre-written stuff, just sort of they begin with a little bit of like backstory. You know, well, this is why this is happening, et cetera, et cetera. And then a little bit of like, now here's the players. And then there might be some other stuff in it. I like to find something that's in that like beginning-ish point to make it a focal opening thing. Something I did that I was, I'm kind of proud of, was how I started my Outlaws of Alkenstar campaign, which was literally like partially at the end of chapter one of the book. There's something that happens. It's a big climactic thing that happens. And I sort of started in media res with that. And then sort of it because that also has one of the big major bads there, just sort of like, you know, shouting there essentially. Right. And without giving too much away, like action happens. Right. But not like an action that required any kind of die rolls at that point. It was just sort of something that was about to happen and being like, you're all here. This is happening. She's shooting at you and yelling, oh, I'm going to get you. You know, you're going to get you for that. And then I go, you know, 24 hours earlier. That's when then all this sort of like, you can't really, you know, maybe someone dies in that first 24 hours. You don't know, but you should say, have all the characters there or whatever.
Yeah.
When they got wounded or whatever, but then you sort of like, okay, now you're me actually meeting now. And sort of, cause those meeting to be like frank, they sort of like meeting in a tavern or meeting anywhere and just sort of getting, can also be a little slow. Can be a little kind of like, you know, not really sure what's going on. You know, we don't know what's going on. We're still trying to feel each other out. But it's good to have that sort of like focal point of like everyone sort of now maybe a little bit invested in what's going to happen, and then they can move on from there. For Abomination Vaults, I just read the nursery rhyme that begins the chapter. Like, not necessarily as the players wouldn't have seen this, and how would they? They wouldn't know. So I said, let me just read this. And it's of a creepy child voice as I possibly could. I did this on Foundry too, so I had the words kind of coming up on the screen as much as I could. And then sort of like when you hear that, and then that is the memory that I went, the person, one of the people who's from Otari, is like, you're thinking this as you are stepping up to the front gate of Gauntlet. You know, something you're remembering from your childhood, someone singing this creepy song. You know, and then be like, you're here. You're actually standing there. I think Abomination Vaults literally says, just start them outside the dungeon.
Yeah.
Then tell them what they're there to do, basically. You know, and then you can kind of like have a little bit like, well, why are you here? Everyone has maybe a little bit of a flashback. I like to have flashbacks, basically.
Yeah.
Flashbacks and flash forwards as possible. That kind of stuff.
No, that's fine. And I liked how that was actually built into Scum and Villainy as well. The flashbacks were a thing.
Yeah.
No, it's funny. As you're talking about that, I was trying to remember how we started Abomination Vaults, and it's like, oh, that was a long time ago. But yeah, I just remember like the first critters that you encounter there, and I don't remember.
Yeah, that was also a weird beginning.
Yeah. Very strange. Yeah, the whole early levels are just very strange in that one, and then A lot of interesting encounters. But no, I think that's I like that. You know, basically foreshadows something that they're going to have happened by doing it. And then, okay, now we're going to go back to the beginning where it all started. You know, just like,
I mean, happens in TV shows, you know, episodes of TV shows all the time where you're like, someone's bleeding and oh my God, it's so much trauma. And you're then,
right. Yeah, it's the ticking time bomb of the story to get you vested and interested and showing you that you have to move forward because something important is going to happen.
Right. So. The other one is this sort of general way to begin stuff is a sort of a general establishing shots kind of montage, not quite a montage, but just sort of general establishing. This is what I did for Scum and Villainy, which is like, boom, here's the ship. You're all on the ship. What are you all doing on the ship at any given moment in time?
Right.
So we get everyone's sort of introduction of character, cutting to everybody essentially. You can do that with sort of, And that sort of maybe sets the sort of like made the ship sort of very important to the group because that's where we're starting and all in. We you know, see maybe if it's quirks and foibles if we get that. But if you're not doing that, it's sort of like here's opening scenes of a place that the characters are in and will be in a lot. When I did, I was on, how long ago was that now? A year ago now? I ran a Pathfinder Society thing. I ran a Pathfinder Society and a Starfinder Society thing to show off Foundry. So we streamed it.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember that now. Yeah.
Yeah. It was so the one that sort of the one Pathfinder Society one that sort of it begins, you're at a party and then you go take this VIP on a little tour, right? I was like, it's what my brain is always like, and now we see like swooping shots, swooping camera angles of the party, yeah. Right? People coming in and like going through and like, what are you doing at the party? And then you're being, your presence is requested here at the venture captain. Instead of just being like, you all show up to the venture
right,
captain.
Right. The venture captain, right, as per usual, in the usual place, you all do the usual thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. No, it's sort of like, showing you sort of like everyone sort of individual, and that sort of helps players introduce their characters to the other players.
Right. Right.
Right. Instead of being in a way that's sort of showing and not telling, right? It's the show and not tell. Yeah. So like,
well, when you have time to do that, I like that. You know, I do a lot of organized play, especially at conventions, and you have, you know, and I usually run specials, and it's like super long scenario and you have a finite time. So I try to, you know, I do intros of people, intros of characters, and some people really play it up, and it's like that, you know, that eats up time off the other end because I know we're going to get no time crunch, but it's really important. Some people spend, you know, tons and tons of time developing their character and their backstory. And for them to be able to share that is very important to them. So you have to allow that time, you know?
Yeah. 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 I sort of like leave that if you can leave a little time built in for that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
If you're running stuff at a con or whatever, if you're, you know, sometimes, you know, also you have pre-gens and that's a lot easier to just sort of hand those out. So you're playing. But tell us who it is, kind of stuff. But if people are bringing their own characters, give them time to breathe. Give the characters time to breathe is sort of the best way to personalize anything.
Right.
I would say.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good point. Yeah. All right. Well, we've covered a lot of ground on this relatively small topic of personalizing adventures, but we've kind of gone a lot of different directions using both Starfinder and Pathfinder and other gaming systems, because I think the storytelling is universal. It's agnostic in terms of, you know, what mechanics are being used, and I think to make it fun for GMs and players, you know, that having a richer story is always better.
Indeed.
Well, I'm John.
And I'm Jason, and this has been Digital Divination.